I will promise you this, that if we have not gotten our troops out by the time I am president, it is the first thing I will do. I will get our troops home. We will bring an end to this war. You can take that to the bank.
Welcome back to Cindy Sheehan's Soapbox here at CindySheehanSoapbox.com and Rational Radio 1360 AM in Dallas, Texas. We're going to open with a speech, a very short speech that I gave in Oslo, Norway, in opposition to Barack Obama receiving the Nobel Peace Prize. So we're going to have the speech right now. So when we come back from the break after my speech, we'll be talking to my friend and a friend of peace and justice, David Swanson.
Thank you. Yeah, we do want change.
We want change.
We want change. We want change.
Okay. That wasn't actually my speech. But we do want change. And change for the better. Not Obama's kind of change, which has been change for the worse. And I want to say I shared something with Early. We were both awarded the Eric Bia Prize for protesting in Kristiansen. So I do have ties to Norway. So anyway, this is my speech. I have three words for the Nobel Committee and for my president. How dare you? How dare the committee give the Peace Prize, which will be forever known now as Peace Prize, to Obama? And how dare he accept it? How dare the committee legitimize the crimes and of the war crimes and other crimes of the Bush regime? Them. The committee said that Obama ordered
Cindy Sheehan's new ebook, Myth America 2, further examines two distinct classes of people that clearly show that we are not all in this together, as President Obama has declared. The first group, the robber class, are wealthy victimizers such as those corporations and politicians that profit off the hard labor of others through economic theft and violent exploitation. The second group, the rob class, are the victims such as those who work multiple jobs just to make ends meet, those who tragically send their children off to die in robber class wars, those who lack proper health care, those who are denied decent education, and those who lose jobs and homes due to robber class graft. The robber class controls our government, and as Cindy says, we, the robbed class, can only be robbed if we allow it. With pinpoint accuracy, humor, and in layperson's terms, Cindy Sheehan shows us why we should no longer be codependent with the robber class. To obtain a copy of Myth America 2, please visit CindySheehansSoapbox.com.
Hi, my name is Pam. I live in the Tenderloin District of San Francisco, and I have been a supporter of Cindy's since she announced she was going to run for Congress against Congresswoman Nancy Pelosi. I worked tirelessly on her campaign because I believe in Cindy, and I believe in the cause of peace and justice that she stands for. If you're listening to this show, then more than likely you support Cindy too. Please consider making a donation to keep Cindy Sheehan's soapbox airing on the web. It is important for me to be able to continue to hear the truth. In a world where truth and courage are in such short supply, Cindy fills that void. Please go to www.CindySheehansSoapbox.com and click on the donate link. That's www.CindySheehansSoapbox.com.
Welcome back to Cindy Sheehan Soapbox. I'm your host, Cindy Sheehan. Today we're going to be talking to David Swanson. David Swanson is one of the founders of After Downing Street Coalition. His website is afterdowningstreet.org, and he's the author of Daybreak, Undoing the Imperial Presidency. So, David, welcome back to Cindy Sheehan Soapbox.
It's wonderful to be back.
Well, it's wonderful to have you back on. So before we get into current events, tell us about, this is a current event, tell us about your book and your book tour and how that has been going.
Well, I'd rather be writing another book, you know, but I am still touring and selling this one. And I've gone to, I think, 36, 37 cities out of about 50 that I'm going to, so I'm most of the way done, and I'll be done by February. It's an off-and-on book tour, so I'm home at the moment, which is nice.
Well, tell us about the name of your book. I've already told my listeners that, but tell us about the name and what it's about and where people can find more information about your tour.
Well, it's called Daybreak, Undoing the Imperial Presidency and Forming a More Perfect Union. And my website is davidswanson.org. You can get the book at any local bookstore or any online bookseller, but if you go to davidswanson.org, you can see my schedule, and I'm going to be in Oregon and Washington and California coming up in January, and these events are a lot of fun for me. I'm just done a lot of them, as I imagine you can relate to, only more so, Cindy.
Well, and it is exhausting, but it's also exhilarating to be out actually among the people of this country talking to different people. I know a lot of times we live in a rarefied atmosphere of almost 24/7 information, writing, activism, and it is nice to just get out and just talk to people about what's going on in their communities, and to think that we're actually not the only people who feel the same way that we feel in the universe.
Yeah, it's great to go to different towns across the country and see how similar the issues and concerns are, and the victories that people are winning at the local and state levels, when, of course, nationally we almost never win anything, and to see that people are energized and informed and enthusiastic, and yet something is blocking the will of the people when it comes to our federal government in D.C., which is, of course, largely what the book is about.
Well, course, my new book, Myth America, and I'm rewriting it to expand it, but it is about rebuilding grassroots democracy and grassroots social programs that are actually independent of what I call the robber class. And the federal government in Washington, D.C. is a huge part of the robber class. But your book, Undoing the Imperial Presidency, the Imperial Presidency isn't something that George Bush and Dick Cheney invented, but of course their administration, especially after 9/11, went far to a unitary government. But how do you think, I know the answer to this, and probably most of my listeners know the answer to this, but how do you think the Obama regime has been doing in undoing the imperial presidency?
You mean you have some kind of complaint with the Obama regime, Cindy?
No. I just, you know, this is an informative interview, so I want you to, you know, inform my listeners about how they're going about in undoing the abuses and excesses, you know, excesses of the Bush administration.
Yeah, well, Obama is a bigger disaster than he was advertised. I mean, he was not campaigning as a president we could be enthusiastic about, but he did make promises that were right on. He very eloquently denounced abuses in terms of altering laws with signing statements and some of these innovative abuses of the Bush-Cheney days, and then turned around and engaged in the very same practices. In some cases, not to the same extent, but more damaging in that rather than treating Bush-Cheney as an aberration and undoing what they did, he is cementing in place everything they did as the way it will be done henceforth. And it's going to be infinitely harder to undo following the Bush and Obama years of seeing laws rewritten with signing statements and created with executive orders and put in place with secret illegal memos and crimes of spying and imprisonment and torture and war crimes, treated as above the law, kept secret, kept protected, the president and the vice president operating really openly above the rule of law. Now, this is something that we could have begun to undo. Not that I would expect a president to take the lead on this, but that the American people could have forced Congress to push back on, and significantly now with a new Congress and a new president. Instead, there's no pushback at all. The Congress that wouldn't impeach anybody, of course, did go through the pretense of caring while Bush was in the White House and subpoenaed all sorts of people, many of whom laughed at the subpoenas. Here we are getting close to a year now without a single person subpoenaed for anything by the new Congress. Nobody in the executive branch subpoenaed, nobody impeached. Jay Bybee sitting there as a judge for life, having authored memos legalizing illegal war and torture. And the president, the new president, accepting all of that, building on all of that, reinforcing it, protecting it in court, and going and accepting a peace prize and openly announcing his claim to the power to launch aggressive wars in a peace prize acceptance speech, something that if George W. Bush had done it, there would have been unfathomable outrage in this country.
Oh, yeah. People would have been out on the streets for sure. That, of course, I was in Oslo when he made that speech and when he was accepting a peace prize that never should have been given. It's not exactly his fault that he was awarded the peace prize, but you would think that even for an American president, that speech was appalling. And what's appalling to me more so, David, is the lack of outrage from people who were adamantly opposed to the same policies under the Bush administration. So what Obama did in his speech was to reinforce the Bush doctrine, but now it's the Obama doctrine.
And, you know, I can think of hundreds of people, including you, who are far more deserving of a Peace Prize than Barack Obama. And he acknowledged that early in his speech. He admitted that there were many, many people, some unheard of, around the world who had done much more for peace than he had ever done or apparently had any plans to do. And yet he chose to accept the prize. He didn't say, no, give it to someone more appropriate. He accepted it, and he showed up and gave a speech promoting war and promoting illegal powers of war and bragging about the history of the United States, including the history of the United States in establishing international law and the UN Charter, and then openly tossing out the UN Charter and saying, no, I'll have nothing to do with that. I'll launch wars when I care to, in a Peace Prize acceptance speech. It's just incredible the contrast in the response from liberal commentators to that, and what it would have been had Bush given that speech. It's just remarkable the way that people twist their minds because someone has a different party identification on their name.
Well, what's also very interesting about that Nobel acceptance speech was not just the lack of outrage on the left, but the overwhelming show of support from the right.
Oh, they loved it. They loved it.
Doesn't that tell us something? If Sarah Palin is saying, that looks like something I could have written and said?
You would think people would be catching on. When you have a president doing everything the neocons like, and yet you still have this obsession, not just by Fox News, but by ordinary, progressive, open-minded Americans around the country with the teabaggers, with this little fringe southern racist minority that's on TV so much, as if they're some major force in this country, and their accusations against Obama for being a socialist when they don't even have any idea what that means. And therefore, well, it's our job to defend the president, and he must be doing something right since these ignorant people are so mad at him. Well,
right.
You know, half of what they're mad at him for are legitimate grievances, and half of it is racism and nonsense. But underneath, he is pleasing all the wrong people, and displeasing anyone paying any attention. And we've been through this with Bill Clinton. This is nothing new. And you look at the legal memos that Jay Bybee signed for George W. Bush, and half of them amount to Bill Clinton did this so we can do it. Bill Clinton did that so we can do it. They loved Bill Clinton's crimes and abuses while denouncing him again as a socialist and a leftist and a communist. Somehow we have to see through this superficial partisan bickering to the overwhelming agreement among parties on what's happening in terms of significant decisions and disagreement by all parties with the majority of Americans.
Well, early you said about the abuses of the Bush administration, how Obama is certainly not undoing that imperial presidency. You said that we can't really expect a president to give up his powers, and that Obama is not doing them to the extent that the Bush administration did. Well, that's what somebody commented, too, that there's not really much difference between Bush and Obama as far as foreign policy goes, but at least Obama hasn't killed as many people as Bush managed to kill in his administration, but Obama's only been there for a year. Do you see any, not even a year, do you see any hope for the future and any kind of move towards accountability, towards justice, towards rebalancing the federal government?
Well, I don't think the test should necessarily be how many people have they each killed yet.
Right. Well, I don't either.
Because you have to sort of, I mean, all the people that Obama kills in illegal wars, Bush gets some of the blame for that, having created those wars and having established those powers. And for coming generations, anybody that presidents kill in illegal aggressive wars, Bush and Obama get some responsibility for, having put those powers in place and proclaimed them in a Peace Prize acceptance speech. I try not to have hope. I think hope is a toxic substance, and I think Obama has taught a lot of people that. But I do have, as I know you do, the will to take action to force things to change. I think we have to get over our obsession with the emperor. We have to get around this presidentialism that's destroying our country, and we have to go to the American people at the local and state and national levels, and in terms of our federal government, we have to force change through Congress, which is incredibly difficult, outrageously, unfairly stacked against us, but far easier and far more advantageous and far more strategic in the short term and the long run than trying to lobby a president. You know, we never lobbied presidents before. It's very, very difficult. We used to protest Bush, but we didn't go talk to Bush and think he was going to listen to us and share our concerns. You know, we went to Congress and we said, cut off the money. And we were building strength towards cutting off the money. And we weren't close yet, but we were making progress. Now we've taken two steps back and we're starting from scratch, building up. We have two or three dozen in Congress who will cut off the money, and we have to get to 218. But that's the path we have to move down. And we have to restore the powers of Congress in other forms as well, if Congress is going to be listened to, if presidents aren't just going to illegally continue wars even with the money cut off. We're going to have to get back the power of subpoena and the power of impeachment.
Well, you know, we did, like you said, strenuously lobby Congress, many times being arrested. Or I'll never forget the time that we interrupted Rahm Emanuel. And was that January 2007 when the Democrats were taking over control of Congress?
We were there to
lobby him for a progressive, very progressive agenda of stopping the war funding and holding George Bush and Dick Cheney accountable. So we just happened to be in Congress that day, and we found out that the Democrats were going to give a press conference about their agenda, and their agenda didn't include stopping war funding or holding George Bush and Dick Cheney accountable. So tell my listeners what happened when we found out that there was that press conference that day.
Well, as I recall, we were going in that direction. We found out about it. It was in the Cannon office building up on the second floor over the railing that looks down towards an entrance. And we took it over, and it became a Cindy Sheehan press conference. The press stayed and listened, and the Democrats gave up and scurried for cover. And it was much more informative, much more interesting press conference, although, of course, it got less coverage than the boring drolling of Rahm Emanuel's corporate agenda would have gotten. But Emanuel at that time also gave an interview to the Washington Post where he laid it out pretty openly that they were going to keep the war going so they could run against it again 2 years later. They were going to keep Bush and Cheney around so they could run against them again 2 years later. They weren't going to try to make any major changes in any policies. They were just going to go along as the we're not the Republicans party. And they're going to do that again. I mean, they're going to be running against Bush and Cheney 2 years from now. They're going to be running against the teabaggers and Sarah Palin. They're going to be running as we're not as crazy as these people. But that's all they have to offer on top of, you know, really criminal negligence and refraining from engaging in any of the actions that they've been repeatedly elected to accomplish.
Well, and I don't think they're just – I really don't think there's going to be much – there can't be much of a credible opposition from the Republicans in 2012 because Obama is actually moving far to the right to accommodate any kind of criticism that will come from the right. The opposition in 2012 has to come from the left, but you know that's not going to happen because just like when we interrupted Rahm Emanuel's press conference, I'll never forget the look on his face that day. It's like, what? You're going to be protesting us too? You know, aren't we the fulfillment of your dreams? Well, of course they're not. Do you see any credible opposition coming from the left?
Well, no moment is like any past one, and right now we are in an interesting situation where the Democrats have been given large majorities in both houses and the White House and have chosen to not do a damn thing with it. That's new, and there is the potential there for people to wake up and take appropriate action. And for a lot of people, that means move to Canada, crawl under the bed, give up, decide to not be a political person, and so forth. For other people, it means go to the Republicans. But for other people, it means taking action independent of parties and giving up this obsession with parties and criticizing and opposing elected officials exactly the same if they're Democrats or if they're not Democrats. And there is the possibility that people will move in that direction. But, you know, it's very, very slow. I mean, there are a lot of people who it's taken a year who are just starting to blame Barack Obama for things. You know, it'll probably take at least another 6 months to a year to get them to pay any attention to Congress or to grasp the idea that we shouldn't be crediting or blaming a president for all things as if he's an emperor, but should be imposing our will through a legislature. You know, this is a long process to educate people. Luckily, we have some good media outlets like this one, and they're growing, but you know, we don't control our airwaves, and so it's an uphill fight. But it's certainly possible that people will take good actions in between elections and good actions in the coming elections next year and in 3 years.
Well, we do have midterm elections coming up for Congress, and I see there always is in the midterm elections the party of the president seems to lose some seats. Not all the time, but, you know, traditionally that's what happens. But we are planning something in Washington, D.C. this coming year called Peace of the Action, P-E-A-C-E of the Action. We're planning on setting up camp on the lawn of the Washington Memorial called Camp Out Now, and we're planning on doing civil disobedience every day, targeting the entire system outside of politics, but in the hope that we will move Congress to the place that they need to be to start cutting off funding, to start, you know, maybe even revoking their what Obama said in his speech when he was escalating the war in Afghanistan. He said that Congress has given the president authority to do that, and unfortunately that's true. Maybe they will even start to revoke the authority. And it's, you know, my position, if the Democrats move close to their base, then they will be reelected, and if they don't, then they won't be reelected. However, do you envision in Peace of the Action that causing a backlash and people, I've already had people tell me, well, if you do this, then you're just going to play right into the hands of Sarah Palin and Rush Limbaugh.
Yeah, people who say that should just stay in bed and not go outside of their house when the sun is shining because their shadow might scare them to death. They need to run for cover or think a little bit about what it means to be operating completely out of fear, and how it could be possible to ever make progress playing only defense without any offense. I mean, here, you know, we have this very public, very famous example of the healthcare debate in which the Democrats have played only defense, pre-compromised, self-censored, compromised some more, gotten to the point of no possibility of accomplishing anything useful without starting over. The people who operate purely out of, well, I'll do anything that's better than Sarah Palin and I won't criticize it or make suggestions because that would be aiding Sarah Palin, this is what they've wanted, and this is the fruits of that labor, and this is typical. This is what you get when you don't push for anything. We as citizens are not supposed to be servants of our elected officials or of their party that they've chosen to belong to. It's supposed to be the other way around. And to make it the other way around does absolutely nothing to boost some other party or some other elected officials with whom we disagree more. This is not yes or no, who's good, who's bad. This is which members come closer to the policy positions we hold. And if the Republican is even farther away, that is going to remain evident, and we are perfectly capable of making that point as well. But, you know, bowing down before elected officials who are going against everything that the American public wants and needs is suicidal. It's mass suicide. I am certainly going to be there with you in March in Washington. I hope people go to peaceoftheaction.org and sign up and agree to come. If the Supreme Court in January throws out any limitations on corporate purchasing of elections, there may be more outrage to tap into. And we need to harness that, and we need to organize it, and we need to put people in the offices in Washington to shut this thing down. And it's completely doable.
Well, I want to get back to that Supreme Court case, but I want to stick on Piece of the Action for a second. Now, of course, people still blame Ralph Nader for George Bush winning in 2000. And, you know, if the Democrats lose seats, I don't realistically think there's any way they're going to lose the majority. But if they lose seats or whatever, you know, instead of people putting the blame where it belongs on the Democratic Party, they will put the blame on us. But we're going to have to reject that and say, you know, the Democrats are the ones to blame for not fulfilling the will of their base. And I put out something. It was this little funny thing that said, you know, if Obama doesn't end the wars and torture, you know, hold George Bush accountable, I forget what the list of demands were, then it said, we swear to God we're going to vote for him with less enthusiasm in 2012. That can't be right. Our position. Our position is that, no, you come towards us. We're tired of compromising our values and moving to you.
Well, I think the president is going to get a lot of the blame when the Democrats lose seats. I think maybe too much so. I don't think everything should be about the emperor and everything should be to his credit or blame. But certainly he deserves a lot of blame for his performance, but so does Congress.
It has to be the party. It has to be Nancy Pelosi. It has to be Harry Reid. It has to be the conformist Congress that gets the blame. Nancy Pelosi was Time Person of the Year. She was like the second choice for the Person of the Year for Time Magazine this year, and I just wonder what she exactly did to deserve that.
Right. They said she was powerful and had taken control of Congress and was enforcing all of Obama's agenda, whatever that may be, as if Congress shouldn't have its own agenda and it shouldn't come from the American people. But you're absolutely right that Harry and Nancy should get most of the blame for how our government is being misgoverned. There's no question. But I think that the president will get a lot of it. And I think there's so much to go around. The SEIU, the Service Employees International Union, today has a position very similar to what you just said. Their position now on health care, on this rotten corporate bailout of a health care bill, is that they'll support it, but they're going to criticize it really severely, right?
Yeah.
Because everything's wrong with it. There's nothing good in it. They're going to criticize it, but of course they'll support it. You know, that kind of position, which has been the position of all the astroturfing activists and labor union groups from the beginning on health care and every other issue for the past 12 months, is disastrous. There's plenty of blame to spread around.
Well, let's really quickly, in the time we have left, go back to what you were talking about, that very important Supreme Court case that's coming up in January that, of course, isn't being awarded the coverage or the debate that it needs to be, because it is a very, very important case that's coming up before the Supreme Court. Tell my listeners about that.
It is. What they may not rule at all. They may rule very narrowly. They may rule very broadly. And what they may rule is that there can be no limitations at any time on any amount of money coming from corporations into election campaigns, including international corporations. So, you know, foreign money in American elections, on the basis of the argument that corporations are persons and persons have the right to free speech under the First Amendment.
Right.
And bribing elected officials with campaign contributions is a form of speech. This is going to be immediately opposed legislatively through popular campaigns for constitutional amendments, through efforts to reform corporations, to have shareholders take control of corporate decisions, through proposals to create public financing of elections, and so forth. And I don't want this decision to come down. I think it's a disastrous step in the wrong direction. But when and if it does, I'm hopeful that there will be a great deal of outrage and pushback and a popular movement to really amend the Constitution, ultimately, to undo many of the trends of recent decades.
Well, definitely. There is already a movement to have a constitutional amendment to revoke a corporate personhood that was a Supreme Court decision back in 1883, or it was a misinterpretation of a Supreme Court decision in 1883. But I hope you're right, David. I hope if it does come down that way that there is a lot of outrage, because corporations should not have the same right to free speech as we do, because I don't know about you, but I can't afford to give $100,000 to an elected official, and you know that that's what they base their decisions and their bills and their votes on bills on. It's not their constituents. If they actually listened to their constituents, then our troops would be out of the Middle East by now. But we know they don't. We know that, or if they listen to their constituents, we'd have single-payer health care. But they don't listen to their constituents. They already listen to the corporations who have been able to get around that, you know, the contribution limit anyway.
Yeah, one thing that could happen is that the parties might lose some of their dominance, because right now such a huge percentage of the money flows through the parties, but
right.
But not necessarily. And in any case, people will lose any voice or any possibility of control. Every member of Congress will be completely bought and paid for by corporate funding beyond anything we've seen up to now. Again, including foreign corporate money in U.S. elections. And if people think that the Congress is corrupt now and their Congress member won't listen to them now, this will be miles beyond that and will be grounds, I think, for a different approach among people who up until this point have not been very active.
Well, it will definitely be the final nail in the coffin of our representative republic, that's for sure.
It will until we pry it out and tear the thing apart and build it up anew. And I think the amendment you spoke of, taking away corporate personhood, is ultimately what we have to get to. There's going to be a push for an amendment taking away corporate personal rights just under the First Amendment, which is the place where they are most often claimed.
Right.
And I hope that that advances and passes. But there are going to be demands for public financing and other reforms that are making progress at the state level and need to be pursued at the state level, but that ultimately we're going to need nationally if we're going to save this thing.
Well, we're hoping, like you said, that Peace of the Action, PEACE of the Action, will be a large grassroots movement to force our representatives to listen to us. And, you know, I really look forward to 2010, working still with you, David, and that we're hoping that this year we finally will see some movement towards us and not away from us.
Well, I'm glad you're going to be in D.C., and I'm looking forward to being there. And I hope everybody listening plans to join us in March 2010.
Well, I hope you and your family have great holidays and keep up the good work, and I'm sure we'll talk to you again next year.
You too, Cindy, and your grandkids too.
Oh, it's wonderful. Thank you, David. We'll talk to you soon.
Thanks.
That was my guest, David Swanson, from davidswanson.org and afterdowningstreet.org. When we come back from the break, we'll be listening to a listener rant, a listener asked Cindy question, and we'll be closing out the soapbox for the year. So stay tuned. We'll be right back.
Hi, my name is Pam. I live in the Tenderloin District of San Francisco, and I have been a supporter of Cindy's since she announced she was going to run for Congress against Congresswoman Nancy Pelosi. I worked tirelessly on her campaign because I believe in Cindy, and I believe in the cause of peace and justice that she stands for. If you are listening to this show, then more than likely you support Cindy too. Please consider making a donation to keep Cindy Sheehan's soapbox airing on the web. It is important for me to be able to continue to hear the truth. In a world where truth and courage are in such short supply, Cindy fills that void. Please go to www.cindysheehansoapbox.com and click on the donate link. That's www.cindysheehansoapbox.com.
Cindy Sheehan's new ebook, Myth America 2, further examines two distinct classes of people that clearly show that we are not all in this together, as President Obama has declared. The first group, the robber class, are wealthy victimizers such as those corporations and politicians that profit off the hard labor of others through economic theft and violent exploitation. The second group, the robbed class, are the victims such as those who work multiple jobs just to make ends meet, those who tragically send their children off to die in robber class wars, those who lack proper health care, those who are denied decent education, and those who lose jobs and homes due to robber class graft. The robber class controls our government, and as Cindy says, we, the robbed class, can only be robbed if we allow it. With pinpoint accuracy, humor, and in layperson's terms, Cindy Sheehan shows us why we should no longer be codependent with the robber class. To obtain a copy of Myth America 2, please visit CindySheehansSoapbox.com.
Welcome back to Cindy Sheehan's Soapbox. Our soapbox rant today is from listener Len Clark from Glendale, Arizona. And Len is also a Facebook fan of Cindy Sheehan Soapbox Radio Show. And if you're on Facebook, go to Cindy Sheehan Soapbox Radio Show, and you can become a fan also. So here's Len's rant.
Carry on, my wayward brothers and sisters. Let us spread the word that the president's only a man, after all. And he's not a god. He's like any emperor who does not wear clothes. I would like to say that I feel that it's wrong for my fellow American soldiers and veterans to die for the laws of Sharia and legalized rape in Afghanistan. There are many other reasons that my fellow soldiers and veterans who have fought over there should not have gone and should not be there now. For example, we are fighting for a pipeline that's yet to be built through Afghanistan, not for democracy. We should not let our young people go into a military that treats them not as human beings, but as expendable chattel. I myself, while serving in Iraq, witnessed soldiers being treated like inanimate objects and being treated cruelly. I would also like to say that I don't think my fellow American soldiers should be the only ones sacrificing and dying while the rest of America looks on. And this is not least of all, to me, one of the largest insults, and that is letters of condolence. The president refuses to send letters of condolence to the families of those soldiers who have died in combat zones when they have committed suicide, even though their suicides have been caused by mental illness and PTSD. We're being lectured by the president and the elites in power that we should pay attention to this problem of PTSD and mental illness among my fellow soldiers and veterans. Yet, when it comes down to it, the president lied in his speech. He lied because in the very beginning of his speech, he said that he sends letters of condolences to all of the families of these fallen soldiers who have been defending their nation. But yet, he did not and still does not and refuses to send letters of condolences to these families of these fallen soldiers just because they committed suicide because of the PTSD they might have suffered or the mental illnesses. This is an insult and a slap in the face to my fellow soldiers and their families. I'd also like to add that I, as a veteran, am on the new GI Bill, and I have been waiting for almost 2 months, along with many thousands of other soldiers, veterans, who have not received their housing allowance payments and who are about ready to be evicted with their families or already have been. How can they tell us to go fight when they're not even taking care of the veterans? Nancy Pelosi and elites, during their photo ops, tell you that they have sent out payments to all the soldiers. This is a lie. It is not being done. And the Veterans Administration and the President and the Congress refuse to do anything about it, despite our repeated inquiries to them to change this horrible problem with the new GI Bill. I also ask you, should American soldiers, should we be fighting and dying in Afghanistan when the Afghani government and our own government, Bush's government included, and this one, are negotiating with the Taliban? It's about the same as prohibition during the 1920s, when we tried to enforce an alcoholic prohibition. And we're going to be just about as successful now, forcing our way, our military, down the throats of the Afghani people. They do not want us there. I also ask my fellow soldiers, should we be fighting in an undeclared war when all of the political elites call it a war? In other words, there's no draft, and you are the same ones that get sent over and over and over again. And then they tell you, well, you had a choice to put your hand up in the air, when they ignore the fact that there is an economic draft. When a man goes in or a woman goes into the armed forces, they go in because they have no choice to get medical health care for their children that this country will not provide except through the blood-sucking medical insurance companies. Should that be what we're fighting for? I also ask, should we be fighting for a leader, a general, who is now in charge and who was placed in charge by President Obama, General McChrystal, who covered up Pat Tillman's death? A very good man who should have had the truth told about the circumstances of his death instead of having his uniform and his journals burned. That is wrong. We should not be dying for that. Here in Arizona, where I live, we need money for our education, for our elderly. But instead, they will not supply that, but they will supply $1 million per year per American soldier in Afghanistan and Iraq. Should we die for that? And should we fight for that? And finally, I believe that we need to pressure our president and our Congress and let them know that they are not serving a king. President Obama is not a king. There is no declared war. When the final answer comes, push comes to shove, our Congress controls the purse. Nobody has declared this president a king, although it seems implied. They, the Congress, need to stop funding this illegal and immoral occupation. This is not a war. This is colonialism. This is imperialism. And our fellow American soldiers are forced to go in an economic draft. I, as a National Guardsman, did not have a choice. I was forced to go when I enlisted under the assumption that I would be serving my state or my country in natural disasters. I ask all of you to call your congressmen and to demand that they do not vote for any more funding and convince anybody who wishes to go into the United States Armed Forces, point out the fact to them that they will be fighting for legalized rape. Tell them to talk to other veterans who are not being paid, whose families are out on the street now, who are homeless. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Lynn. Thank you for participating in our soapbox. This is really our soapbox. You can send your rants to me at cindyssoapbox@gmail.com. And today we have a special Ask Cindy question. It's an MP3 question from listener Carrie West in San Francisco.
Independent Party filmmakers, artists, bloggers, our entire peace movement shares horror stories pertaining to the media manipulation of America's independent voice, our voice. our viewpoints, hopes, and dreams. Sidelined, parried, beneath Republican and Democratic Party corporate diversional programs designed to scatter our message into oblivion. Cindy, how can we break through the chains of media oppression in a world thirsty for truth? Carrie West, San Francisco.
That's a good question, Carrie. How do we take our media back? Because the media, the airwaves belong to us. The airwaves are a public commons, and they have been taken over by a cartel of media groups where we see that most of our media is owned by just a handful, literally a handful of people, and they have an agenda, and their agenda is profit. And their agenda is supporting the status quo. So to take over the media, we might as well forget about CNN. We might as well forget about Fox. We might as well forget about MSNBC, NBC, ABC, CBS. They're all part of the robber class media industrial complex. What we have to do is be our own media, and we see that that is happening. We see that the Internet is taken over by alternative media, and we need to support alternative media like Cindy Sheehan's Soapbox. So thanks for your question, Carrie.
Thanks for listening to the show today. I have something unfortunate to announce. Rational Radio in Dallas will be going off the air. They struggled really hard for funding to keep it on the air, but they'll be going off after Christmas. And speaking of Christmas and the holidays, I want to wish all of you a happy Festivus. Festivus, as you know, is a holiday for the rest of us. And when we come back in the new year, we'll be having our special first year anniversary show. I can't believe we've already been on for a year. Remember, you can listen to all our archive shows at CindySheehanSoapbox.com. And you can also check the website for an exciting protest we're going to be holding in front of the CIA headquarters in Langley, Virginia, against the CIA drone bombings. And as we close the day, we're going to be listening to a few words from George Bush and Barack Obama and realizing that they're all the same. So thank you for listening to the show. Thank you for supporting us this year. And we'll talk to you in January. Peace out. Love you.
Ladies and gentlemen, the President of the United States.
I have determined that it is in our vital national interest to send an additional 30,000 U.S. troops to Afghanistan.
I've committed more than 20,000 additional American troops to Iraq.
In Afghanistan, we and our allies prevented the Taliban from stopping a presidential election.
The elections of 2005 were a stunning achievement.
I insisted on a thorough review of our strategy.
It is clear that we need to change our strategy in Iraq.
As your commander-in-chief, I owe you a mission that is clearly defined.
Our troops will have a well-defined mission.
30,000 U.S. troops.
20,000 additional American troops.
Presidential election.
The elections of 2005.
Strategy.
Strategy.
Clearly defined.
Well-defined mission.